Okay, I would ask you about photography in your family. Is there a tradition of taking photographs in your family?
There seems to be a tradition of taking photographs because there were so many pictures that have been passed down on both sides of my family, on my father's side and on my mother's side. And part of what we found in my dad's drawer the first day that I started looking were groups and groups of pictures. And a lot of them, I'd say 60% of them, had either names written on the back or the event that had occurred. Something was there. Those that didn't have anything written on it, my mother knew most of those. And it has been so helpful because it really helps me relive the past. I know we're supposed to kind of let the past go and keep moving forward, but sometimes you need the past to help you find the direction you really want to go. So these photographs have just been phenomenal.
And how do you keep your photographs?
I found them in a great big brown waxed chicken box. And that's where I've kept them, because they have kept for 45 years in that box. They're unscathed. And because of that, I think that's a secure place for them. I have bought acid-free tissue and acid-free sleeves to put some of the older ones in. I had one very, very old picture of my great-grandfather that was basically falling apart. And rather than try to hold on to it, I had it copied and I donated the original to the Spencer Research Library in Kansas, because that's where he lived and worked. And I thought, in the future, if anybody's ever looking for him, that would probably be where they would go to find him. So that's why I put that there. There are a few others that I need to think about doing that too also. But I really have to get permission from the family members who put those in my care to do that. And it seems like I have become the family historian for some reason or another. Everybody, cousins, everybody else who have pictures are saying to me, "Marilyn, here, take this, take care of that, take care of the other thing." And so my collection of pictures has grown. And I've not ever stopped to count them, but I'm sure there have to be 300, 400, I don't know, maybe more than that.
Why do you think people give you the photographs? Is it because they don't have a place for them, or they know that you're so interested in them, or they want to sort of deposit it in sort of a safe place, in a family archive, so to speak? Or why do you think?
I think people give me their photographs to take care of because they know I care about them. They know that I'm trying to put together our family's history and that I will use them carefully. I think that's basically it.
Do you also have some photo albums?
We do have photo albums. Some I couldn't even get the pictures out of because that what we used to think to be magnetic coverings really have glue on them. And they make things stick to the point where you can't get them out, unfortunately. My father kept newspaper articles and pictures of my track career. He bought these matched books, and so I have a matched set of albums that have my track and field career in it. And looking back on those, I can see the loving care that was taken in each step. And that's made me kind of want to keep track of everything in history. My mother gave me my baby book when I was an adult. And in the baby book, she had written narratives of what I had done. So when my son was born, I began a narrative on him. And I write on it occasionally. In fact, the last time was last week that I wrote about my son in his baby book. So someday he and his wife will have it. But I want to wait until I know he wants it.
When you were saying about your track career albums, did your father put them together for you?
Or? Yes.
Ah, oh, I see.
Yes.
And on what occasions do you look at your photographs?
I don't know. Sometimes when I'm walking around the house, I'm feeling like I need to connect myself to whatever. I sit down and look at them. I love to have people come over, and I take everything out, as you can well attest to. I love to share them with my family. Sometimes we just, that's just something we feel like doing, so we do it. A lot of times when I look at my track albums and I go in, we have a music room that has all my trophies and stuff in it. Sometimes I go in there when things are not really going the way I think they ought to be going, or if I'm feeling insecure about something, I go in there to remember the talent that the Lord gave me and know that He's never going to put me in any position that I can't deal with. And I look at that because not only are my track albums in there, but also the paperwork from the court process of reversing the adoption, that's in there too. So it reminds me that, yes, there are going to be trials in life. There are a lot of things in life that are not going to be easy. But the Lord says He will never leave you or forsake you. And I believe that. And sometimes when my faith is getting a little bit low, I go in there and I remind myself where He's brought me from. Then I know where I'm going.
And what are your plans for your photos?
Oh, that is so hard. Little by little, I am trying to preserve those that need preserving. I'm really looking for a depository for them where they will actually be used and not just be sitting in mothballs. I thought about the California African American Museum, but I held on to them because everything is so tentative and the funding was never really where it needed to be to assure me that my photos will be there for life. I'm leaning probably toward willing them to my genealogy society or to one of the other black genealogy societies where they will be well used. Ultimately, those things that belong in Kansas, I'm sure, will be in the Spencer Research Library because I have been there, I have seen the care that they take of their photos and their documents, and they are accessible to people. And that's what I want. I want them accessible. Not just stashed somewhere and you need a special permit or a doctorate or whatever to get in there and look at them. I want them accessible. So I have not decided exactly what to do, but I pray that I have time. You never know.
And how important are your photographs to you? What do they mean to you?
I put those photographs by my front door. If there's ever a fire here, it's going to be one of the first things I pull out of this house. So they're right there under the window. I can get it through the window. I can get it through the front door. But I would like to preserve them. I won't die if something happens to them. But it would break my heart. And this is one of the reasons that wherever I research, I always allow that library or that archive to make a copy of everything that I have, everything that I have found to date about that particular ancestor in that area, so that if something does happen to these, at least they're somewhere.
Okay, and this is going to be kind of difficult, but we've copied about 50 photos from you. Maybe we can just go through them right now, and if you could pick out maybe five that mean the most to you.
Okay.
What have the most significant meaning to you for different reasons. Should we do that?
Yes, we'll
okay.
Take a break and do that.
Okay. Okay, we've got photo 12. Is that 12? Yeah, 12,
okay,
18.
Do this one separately.
Oh, okay. We're starting with these three, number 28, number 18, and number 32.
Well, these photographs remind me of how active my grandmother was in all of these different societies and in the Elks and the Women's Club movement. And she really served as an example to what I need to do in my life to be a benefit to society, because that's exactly what she was to society during her lifetime, always lifting others up. And the banner that the women's group is holding says, "Lift as we climb."
In number 32?
Yes. Uh-huh. And that
is a philosophy that I have tried to hold on to all of my life. Even before I knew that she was in a club like that, it was just something about grandma that she could bring the best out of you without ever squashing the excitement and the adventure in you. And that's why. This other picture, number 12, shows Gilbert White and Ella Sarah White and my Aunt Gladys. And I think the reason I love this picture so much is because the smile that is on my grandmother's face is the smile that I got from her as a child. And it's one of those that lifts you up. It doesn't matter what's going on in your life. When somebody looks at you with that much love, there's nothing that can go wrong that can't be fixed. And that's what that is. Just a wonderful lady and a wonderful family. Now, this Gilbert White was named after Gilbert Seton, who would have been his grandfather and my great-great-grandfather. Moving on to picture number 41, this is, it's labeled Suzette Jacques, but when I went to New Orleans, I found out that she was Suzanne Jacques, and that she was a nun living in New Orleans. She and another nun had joined the convent together from the same family, so we had more than one nun in the family. Suzanne stayed, and I found her obituary in New Orleans. The other nun was Suzette, so there was a Suzette and there was a Suzanne, and they were related. They came from the same city, the same neighborhood. The other nun was put out of the convent because she and her friend decided that they wanted to run one of the missions without the Mother Superior's knowledge, and they gave a fair at the local elementary school. They would not have gotten caught if they had not forgotten to turn out the lights in the school. And so Mother Superior was notified that the lights were on, and she found out that they had given a fair and made some money. So she called the railroad, she went down to the railroad office and found out that two nuns had bought tickets, one-way tickets to this mission. So she telegraphed ahead to the bishop and told him what had happened, and they were sent packing and put out of the convent. But that was one piece of information that I found when I went researching in New Orleans. And that's the fun of researching, that you come up with these tidbits that you would never have thought could have happened. And it puts the life of the people, it makes it real. And it's not just a book you're reading, but it's really something that happened. Okay, oh, this is George O. Paris White, my grandfather, number 26. This man is what the kids call now a class act. I don't remember him too well, except that he was always so stately, and he was, I looked up to him. You know, if there was a picture of God, I knew God was going to look just like him. There was never a doubt. He was loving and kind. And my grandmother and my grandfather, they went together. They really were perfectly matched. I think the Lord matched these two people up. That they are just, they were super people, and they meant a lot in my life because they gave me the confidence to do whatever I wanted to do in life. And that's where my father got his philosophy from. That's where I get my philosophy from. And I hope I've passed it to my son. But that's what we have to do. That's what families are for. And then this picture number 35. Actually, 35 and 36 go together, because this is an example of why my grandparents' philosophy of being the best you can be and knowing who you are and whose you are makes a difference. My father invented a gas tank
in the trunk of a car. Now, somehow or another, he got talked out of it or sold it to someone who really made a lot of money on it, because that's basically where the gas tanks are now, under the trunk of the car. But it just shows that this philosophy works, and I'm not going to veer from it one bit. And I hope that my son will not. This architectural award that my father won just is evidence of his talent. He's a very, very talented artist. And I have a picture that my mother found when she was moving here to our house of the Last Supper that he started painting, and it's only half finished. So I'm keeping it exactly like that. But he was a very talented person. And it helps me make my son understand that each of us is given talents, and that it's our job to figure out what these talents are and to use them according to the will of God. If we do them that way, he will honor them and enhance them. If we use them contrary to the will of God, he'll let us get away with it for a little while. But then it'll be to our detriment that we continue to use them that way. And I, looking back on my ancestors, I can see that the talents that they had, they used according to God's will, because the blessings are still flowing through this family. There's just no doubt about it. Oh, boy.
Now, these are some of the ones that have you in them.
This is, okay, picture number one. Oh, yes, this fourth birthday party. I'm telling you, most of the faces I remember. Now, there's one little girl back here. Her name was Toy. And I don't know what kind of magnet that this girl had, but I would go and play with her. She would fuss at me. She would make me eat salt. She would... I'd come back crying every day, but every morning I wanted to go over there and play. So I haven't figured out exactly why. But I remember her name. And this is Toy right here, right next to me. Of course, right behind me, probably pinching me, who knows. And then my cousins, Danny and Tommy, are in the picture. A lot of the neighborhood kids. These are the kids who lived on 41st Place, right off of Central, when we were living at 1158 and a half East 41st Place. Let me find Donald. Donald was my boyfriend, the first boyfriend I ever had in life. That's Donald right there. I always wonder what he's doing with himself now. So, Donald, if you're out there. Oh, golly. This picture, number two, is a family portrait done, oh, I guess 1954. So I look like I'm about 10 years old. The twins are sitting there looking astute, as usual. And the funniest thing about this picture was that right before the photographer came, my brother was playing with a pair of handcuffs, and he couldn't get them off when it was time to take the picture. So he had to take the picture in those handcuffs. Approximately 20, 25 years later, maybe 20 years later, we recreated the same picture with my mother and father sitting exactly where they were sitting in this picture, with me standing in the back. And with, let me see if it's up there. Oh, it's right here on the wall. And instead of my brother being on the little chair in front, we put my son in the little chair. And I looked and looked and looked for handcuffs, because I wanted the picture to be exactly the same, and we couldn't find handcuffs. So we had to use a little bunny rabbit, a little stuffed animal instead. But we recreated the picture. My sisters are standing behind each parent whose lap they were sitting in this picture. And it's a very special picture. But, I mean, when you look at our faces, that was really us. It wasn't just a smile put on for a camera. That's really us. And if I say so myself, we're pretty cool folks. Now, on number 49, I don't know the names of these two men, but they were blacks in Lawrence, Kansas, around 1870. And this was on the river, I think it was the Kaw River. They caught
two of the biggest fish you ever want to see. And I guess so that they didn't have to go home and tell the old fish story, well, the fish was this big, they took a picture of it.
That's such a great picture.
Uh-huh. This was a family picnic.
Number three.
Mm-hmm. The family picnic is a continuing picnic that started in, what did my mother tell me? This is the 50th year last year. So, let me do it. 19, I can't subtract. Come, Amy, help me.
What is it again?
Okay, wait. Last year was the 50th year of our party, of our family picnic. So I had to just subtract. 1940.
Okay.
Now, it started before 40 because it was before Mama came out. But it started in Kansas City when my mother was a kid. And the people would go around. They had two trucks, they said. The first truck went around and it picked up all of the people who were going to the party. And the second truck picked up all of the food. And so then they would go to a big park in Kansas City, Missouri, and have this picnic. It was once a year. And it continued once a year all the way here into Los Angeles, which is where most of the family is now. And my cousin and I have been in charge of the picnic for the last 3 years. And we're having it again.
Where do you have it?
At different parks. We're trying to find a park that we really like, but the parks have changed so much that it's hard to find one that's safe and secure, and it has easy access for the elderly and parking close enough. And so this year we're going to have it at Westchester Park, and we'll see how that works. It's been hard getting the kids to come out because there's nothing to do but sit around and talk, and the kids don't like that. So we are hoping that Westchester Park will help. There's a bowling alley across the street. There's golf. There's swimming. You name it, it's there. So we're hoping to continue this tradition. We don't want to let it slide. Oh, boy. This is number four. And this was right before I went to Washington, D.C. to teach. I was still running track, and the girl on the left, Charlotte Cook, was my roommate when I was in Washington, D.C., because I arrived there with really nowhere to live, and she had an apartment, and so we shared an apartment that first year.
And she is an athlete, too.
Yes, and she was a 400-800 runner, and I was a sprinter. We were on Brooks Johnson's team.
And you have trophies here.
Well, this was some meet or another. I don't remember which meet it was.
Uh-huh.
I could probably go find it. It's on my trophy shelf, I'm sure. Okay, number five is when I was working at 92nd Street School, 92nd and Grape. It was my very first year of teaching. I had been basically dumped into a position of teaching physical education to 1,100 students per week. And it was without benefit of student teaching that I was doing this. So it really goes to show that teaching is something you're born with, not necessarily something you acquire along the way. But it happened right after Olympic Games, and so I had a lot of contacts. And this is not either at 92nd Street School. I take that back. Number five is at the Boys Club of Santa Monica. And I was going to UCLA at the time. I went to the work studies office, and they told me that Santa Monica Boys Club had an opening for a physical education teacher, but they couldn't give it to a woman. And I asked them, why can't you give it to a woman? I can do anything that a man can do in this position. I can teach these kids whatever they need to be taught, and I will work for free for a month to show you that I can do it. Well, after the first week, they decided to pay me, and so I got the position. And at the end of that year, we had a field day. And it was a field day. It was a dog show. It was a carnival. It was a wonderful event that we had at Santa Monica Boys Club. And I invited C.K. Yang and Rafer Johnson to it, and they came. And this was a picture when I was there. Number six is a picture of Mikiko, a Japanese athlete I met when I was in Tokyo, Japan, for the 1964 Olympic Games. We decided to exchange gifts. We had become friends, and we exchanged gifts. And during the 1984 Games, I attempted to try and find Mikiko again. And in my attempt, the article was run in a Japanese newspaper. And my whole class and I started receiving all kinds of mail and trinkets from people in Japan who had read the article about me being in Tokyo and looking for Mikiko. And people just started writing, and we wrote back, and we had pen pals for the whole year. My class made their own kimonos out of sheets. They sewed their own kimonos. In fact, I have some samples that I kept. We had an Olympic Games. We had everything at the school, and it all was an outgrowth of this attempt to find Mikiko. We ended up with a pen pal room. They took an empty classroom and allowed my class to use it as a museum to display all of the pen pal materials that they had received over the last year. And people came from the district office to see it, from downtown 450 North Grand to see it. It was a wonderful, wonderful event. This, number seven, was basically the surprise of my life. I ran in the LA Invitational for 1963, and I could not believe that I actually had beat Wilma Rudolph, but I had. And in the process, I had beat Jutta Heine of Germany, the German champion. So I received the Athlete of the Meet Award. And as you can see, we didn't even have uniforms. We just had sweat clothes. And that's what our team wore because we were such a new team. But this was just the amazement of my life.
Your face is just so great in that picture. You're smiling so big.
I know.
Well, those are wonderful. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. I have enjoyed this. It's nice to relive life.